Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing, and of course, thank you for leaving all of those reviews on iTunes. Really appreciated. We really like reading them. So carry on doing it because it's very important that you do so for us. Also, find us on all our usual social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, at Jay Beardmore, at the Rugby Dungeon, at Rugby Podcast for Rug Chasers. And if that's not enough rugby for you, check out the Thistle Rugby Podcast, the only podcast dedicated to Scottish rugby. They do it better than anyone else, I believe, and they're in the middle of the Six Nations run. So if you want to find out anything about the great game up north of the border, Thistle Rugby Podcast, really good guys. Talking of Scottish rugby, we've got Richard Cockerell on the podcast today, which is incredible. He's just about to start his new role in Edinburgh at the end of the season. Before we get into any of that, though, if you've been following the Egg Chasers Twitter account, you'll notice that we are looking for some new squad members. Now, that tweet is less than a day old, and we've already got a ton of replies. However, I cannot stress how important it is that you know you need to be in Manchester, preferably be Celtic, and this is the weird one, watch Pro 12. If you can do all those things and you want to get behind a mic and talk about rugby and be a member of this little group we've got going down here, let us know ASAP via Facebook, via email, via Twitter, whatever way you want to, let us know. Because we're going to try something out down here which we've not done before, and we need a few more people. So if that's you, let me know ASAP. Anyway, enough of all that nonsense. Here is my interview with Richard Cockerell. Hope you enjoy it.
Hey, mate. What's
up? Hi, Richard. How are you?
Yeah, good.
How's things over in France?
Yeah, it's okay. It's different. The sun is shining.
What have you been up to today, then?
Today, I've been in the office first thing, doing some work. And then I've been trying to sort out my bank account. So, yeah, that's been interesting. But no, it's all right.
You fully adjusted with your second time out there now?
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, I think I've fallen into it reasonably well. Obviously, I speak the language okay, well enough to coach and get by. So. Yeah, so far so good. I'm enjoying it. It's very different, but enjoyable, yeah.
Now, that's quite an interesting one, because I think I'm right in saying, prior to Mike Ford, there wasn't an English-speaking coach.
At Toulon?
Yeah.
They've got Paul Strigin, who's a conditioning coach, obviously, that was with England and the British Lions, and there's another assistant coach called Steve Meehan, who was he's an Australian guy who's coached at Queensland and the Force, he was at Bath, but also coached at Stade Francais a few years ago. So there's a couple of English speakers, but not actually as head coach. No, Mike's the first.
So what's your exact role within the club then? Because I didn't realise there was quite so many coaches.
Well, there's myself. Obviously, Mike heads it up. There's Steve Meehan, who assists Mike in the backs coaching, and there's a former French hooker called Marc Dalmasso, coaches the scrum. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, I'm doing the line-out attack and the breakdown contact work and part of the team defence. So, yeah, it's been good. Interesting. So, I'm a good squad. Different dynamics from what I've been used to. But, yeah, great experience. And, yeah, enjoying it. Really good place. Some really good people here.
Well, they do say that a change is as good as a break. So how much different is it compared to Tigers?
Oh, yeah, very different. I mean, you know... obviously, culturally, the French, you know, they're only 23 miles away by water, but culturally, it's different around lots of parts of it, especially around lunch times when there's 2 hours break for everything, which is to be fair, that their work life balance is very good. It's a lot better than us English, that's for sure. Difference and everything. It's a more relaxed training's a little bit different. Obviously, there's there's a high number of what's the right way to put it, high profile players.
Yeah.
So it's just managing that. But rugby players are rugby players, so it's just about preparing properly for the sessions, making sure you talk sense. But is it different? It's very different, you know. Timekeeping's a little bit sloppier. Dress code's very, very different. You know, it's pretty much whatever's got a too long badge on, you sort of wear. There's no particular dress code, but that's very different. But that's just how it is. It's not better or worse. It's just very different.
Yeah, I noticed that actually. I was at Sale when Toulon came to visit, and all the Sale boys have got their blazers on, and the Toulon boys basically wear, from what I can tell, tracksuit bottoms and polo shirts.
Yeah, well, I mean, away games are a bit different when you're travelling, but certainly even at training here, as long as it's Toulon apparel, it's can be t-shirts or any sorts of shorts or socks, vests, anything goes for any session, whether it's gym or rugby, and that's just how it's been. But look, they've won the competition, you know, European Cup 3 times. They've won the French Championship. They've got some of the best players in the world. So who's to say it's wrong? It's just different.
Excellent. Well, just talking a little bit broader then, I just want to talk to you about the role of director of rugby. Now, obviously, you were director of rugby up in Tigers. You're going to be a director of rugby again. Since you started in the role, how do you think it's changed?
Oh, I think the animal of professional rugby changes every year. I think it gets bigger. And it used to be just about what happened on the field and training-wise and playing-wise, but now the way the game's gone very global around player recruitment and agents and dealing with agents and dealing with players, and players' mentalities have changed over the last 10 years around what they want and what they want to give and all the things that make professional sport interesting. It's just, the role is, I think the difficulty is, and people don't understand, is that when you're a good coach, you get promoted up the chain. So you can be a good assistant coach, you get promoted to head coach, and then you're a good head coach, you go to DOR. The more you get promoted, the less you coach, and the more distractions you have, and the less attention to the actually important parts, which is playing, get taken, not taken away, but you get distracted because there's players, and there's players' agents, and there's families, and there's always a problem. When you've got 45 blokes who are all driven individuals in different ways, there's always a problem to take you away from the thing that's important, which is the playing part. So I think, and you only get to understand that when you're in the job. So I think those parts have changed a lot. And actually, it's very important to have a good support network and structure around you to help you manage those scenarios.
So how much contact time do you typically expect to have with players, and how much of your time would have been dedicated to actually, you know, game planning or coaching?
Oh, contact time with the players is quite a lot, because they're in the, you know, certainly at Leicester they're in the club, you know, pretty much full days on a Monday, Tuesday, and a Thursday pretty much. On the training field, well, you know, we've probably got, you know, there's 5 sessions a week, so there's probably 5 hours contact time on the training field, which isn't a huge amount considering the week that you have. Obviously, they've then got conditioning and rehab and all those other things and doing their homework and all that part and parcel of a professional player. But as coaches in a coaching group, you'd spend a lot of time previewing games, getting information, getting that information across to players, having individual meetings with players in key positions to make sure they understand what you want to do and how you want to play, and whether that's in attack or defence or set piece, scrum, line out. There's so much that goes into getting a team prepared. How much of that is actually time wasted? And it would be no different if you actually did work. You never know, but you tend to find the best prepared teams are the ones that are confident, and the best prepared teams are the best. You know, the best teams that coach well, and they tend to be the more successful ones. So the degree of fine margins on what percentage you gain from doing all the work is I think you'll never know, really.
At the elite level, how much time is spent focusing on what the opposition are doing and trying to counter that? And how much is spent on actually working on your own game plan, giving the opposition something to think about?
Pretty much probably a 70-30 split, 80-20 split, you know, looking at ourselves for 80% of the time, 20% on the opposition. It's important that you know what the opposition are going to do, and to a large degree. But you can spend a lot of time worrying about what they're going to do, and then take your focus off the detail that you need. So I think it's important that, you know, and that starts from pre-season, about getting your structures in place, so you're not having to revisit things all the time in season, which is always difficult for parts of it. But I think getting your part, you know, how you play, how you defend, how you attack the game, both with and without the ball, are very important, and a lot of concentration goes into that. But also you need to know what the opposition are going to do, and the bit, how you're going to combat that, and how you're going to, you know, hopefully create opportunities to score points.
Now, as a director of rugby, and considering everything you've already achieved, do you look back at things that you could have done differently or better? And are there any specific instances where you thought, maybe I shouldn't have done that?
No, probably not. I mean, I've got myself in trouble a few times, mainly with officials, that I probably could have handled better. But I mean, I think the thing is that there's no one thing. You know, you can't go to a DOR school and learn how to be a DOR. You just have to do it by experience. So, there are some things that I probably could have handled better, should we say. But I think that's all down to experience, whether that's dealing with players or selection or coaching, referees, certain scenarios that happen in games. But I think you have to go through that experience to be better for it. So, and if you've got it, if you're sharp in mind and you can react on the hoof, and you know, some people are naturally better at dealing with that than others under pressure, and then you sort of learn on the way. I don't sort of regret anything. I think everything is you deal with it how you see fit at the time. Sometimes you get that really right, sometimes you get it somewhere in the middle, and sometimes you mess it up. That's life, isn't it?
I guess so. And I also guess it's a bit of a strange one, because people like yourself and your peers who are now gone from playing to coaching, I imagine that you've basically invented this role on your own. Well, not you on your own, but you and your peer group, because it certainly wasn't around when you were playing.
No, somebody invented it. It wasn't me. So, yeah, I mean, job titles are job titles. I think once you're on the pitch and doing your work, you know, I think coaching teams work together. You know, somebody has to have the final call, whether that's training, playing, selection, accountability. You know, a lot of the time, you know, the bigger salaries come with the responsibility rather than what you do. So, but yeah, I mean, it's, some people handle the pressure better as well. In you know, when pressure's on and you have to win, or there's pressure around recruitment and retention and selection, some people deal with that naturally, and that's better than others. So that's just the nature of it. And hopefully you get it right more often than not. But yeah, their job roles as performance directors and head coaches and DORs, and you know, there's a lot of made up stuff, isn't there?
Well, take this question in the spirit that it's intended. But
does that mean it's true then?
It might be. Who knows? We've got another podcast, Egg Chasers, which is basically three lads just chatting about the game like fans. Yeah. And I've got to say, 4 years ago when we started doing it, your post-match interviews provided us with a lot of material. Okay. If we fast forward to, say, you know, 6 months ago, and we're watching one of your post-match interviews, you're a lot calmer, you're a lot more considered. And when you speak to anyone who does, you know, things like post-match interviews or does stuff in the media, they always cite you as one of the more thoughtful directors of rugby. Do you think that's a sign of how much you've changed, or have I just made all that up?
I think with experience, I mean, I think when you're inexperienced and you feel the pressure more than probably when you, like, you know, obviously you feel the pressure, but you handle it a little bit better. I mean, I suppose in my earlier days, my way of combating pressure would be to be more confrontational around interviews and be a bit more dogmatic and a bit more belligerent. I think as time goes on and you feel a bit more comfortable in the position and you've had experiences of winning, losing, dealing with the awkward questions when an interviewer goes, you know, do you think you should consider your position? And you have to bat those questions away around losing your job or not, which is sometimes unpleasant.
Yeah.
I just think you become more comfortable with it because you do it more often. And ultimately, look, it's all one big game, isn't it? You know, Tim Cock is asking the questions because he's getting paid to do it. That's his job. Everybody's got a living to make. So he's doing his job and I'm doing my job. So I think I wouldn't say I'm a person to be intimidated by interviews. I would always stand my corner and stand for what I believe in, whether that's people think that's right or wrong. I'll always back my players. I'll always back my team. And I'll always have a strong character around doing those things.
Well, I actually think there's quite a few people in BT Sport who are not too happy you found new employment so quickly because they'd quite like you up in the booth.
Yeah, well, I got a theory. Those that can coach, those that can't commentate. So let's work on that theory. When I can't do it anymore, I'll go on TV.
Yeah, I don't know where that leaves the podcasters, but probably somewhere beneath the commentators.
I couldn't comment.
A lot spoken about in rugby about philosophy. I was just wondering, what would you say that your philosophy is? And what would you like to say that a Richard Cockerill team looks like?
Yeah, the philosophy is an interesting one because everybody across the world goes, what's your rugby philosophy? And I'm not sure those that live in the real world that actually have to coach it day in, day out in a long competition like the Premiership or the Pro 12, as it's going to be, or at the moment, the top 14, which is a very attritional competition. I think you have to be good at everything. I mean, I want a team that wants to be, you know, I'm a forward by trade and played there. A game is built on a strong forward pack, good set piece, a physically dominant team. If you get physical dominance, you tend to dominate teams, whether that's a forwards-wise or even physicality in the back line. I want a philosophy or a team that can play everything. If you're running the ball from under your own post to score, well, that's great. Make good decisions and do that. But everything comes down to physicality and desire. What would my teams like to look like? Well, tough, uncompromising, hard work. Just get on with their jobs and do them well. But rugby is a pretty simple game. I want us to catch and pass and score nice tries. Now, nice tries can be driving a line out over from 5 metres, or it can be a 75-metre running, flowing move. I want it to be everything, but depending on what players you've got and what the conditions are and et cetera, your philosophy can change from week to week. So I think it's a bit of a... I think philosophies come down to people that have never been on the shop floor actually coaching from week to week trying to win games, because ultimately that's what it comes down to.
You think it's a bit of a buzzword?
Oh, there are lots of buzzwords, yeah. I've found in the professional world there's so many people that will consult and tell you how to do your job that have never actually done it.
Yeah.
I can never, and they've learnt it from a book somewhere or done some thesis on it somewhere, which I respect. However, the best place to learn it is on the shop floor doing it. And I've got 12 years experience of doing that. But yeah, there's a lot of, there's a few David Brents out there that could that are really good at doing presentation, and there's lots of lovely PowerPoints. But actually, the people that should get the most respect are the coaches that are doing it every day, 24/7, 365 days a year. They're the guys that I have most respect for, because it's a blooming difficult job.
Give me some of your least favourite buzzwords then.
Let me think. Let's take ownership and take it forward. I still don't know. So I hear it all the time. Or things like, let's work in that space. What is that? I still don't know what that means. Or, it's important that we stay connected and aligned. Those types of things that you hear on TV programs.
My personal favorite.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The moment is make good decisions. I mean, we all want to make good decisions.
It's a very mute point, isn't it? Because once you get one person with a nice PowerPoint presentation, then it's all about one-upmanship. So I just avoid PowerPoints. I'm more comfortable with grass under my feet than carpet, so that's the best way to keep it.
Do you think too much is made out of the whole player development side? I mean, obviously, developing your players is very important for a skill side. But when people start talking about cultures and all the rest of it, it just seems to be a lot of words. I'm not entirely sure it correlates with success.
Player development's really important. I mean, the game, the world that we live in is changed a lot. So, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, in my mid-40s. So, you know, 20-odd years ago when I was coming through, you played a lot more rugby as a youngster. There weren't academies. So you sort of, you know, I played for Coventry in Division 2 and you come through the Colts and the second team and the first team. And then I got picked up by Leicester. So by the time you've played for Leicester, you're starting to play for Leicester as a 20, 21-year-old, you've had 3 or 4 years experience playing rugby every week, whereas lads these days go into academies at 16 or 17, and the one thing they don't do is play rugby.
Yes.
They work with weights and learning and all that stuff. But like anything, I'm a big believer in you learn from experiences. Obviously, senior players and coaches help you with learning the game and understanding and developing quicker, and that's physically and mentally and understanding the game. But I'm still a big believer that the very best players, that they're born to be the very best players, that they have natural talent or natural physical ability, and then you add that with work ethic and desire, and then they become some of the best players in the world. So I think you can develop players, you can make them better, but the very best players have all that coaching and help, but they are naturally always going to be a very good player. You know, you can only polish what you've got so much before the natural talent either kicks on or it doesn't, or they haven't got it. There are ceilings for everybody, aren't there? But I think it's all important. But I think you can spend a lot of time trying to develop players that may not ever be as good as how you'd like them to be.
Just a follow-on from that then, on young players not getting enough game time. Now, I'm going to put the caveat out to my listeners that they're sick of me talking about this point. But I tend to find a lot of players in the academy, a lot of the young lads, just aren't getting enough rugby. Do you agree with that? And if so, how do you see a solution for this to get them more game time?
Yeah, definitely they don't play enough rugby. And it's a difficult one to solve. I think I could never understand why, certainly in English Union, they stopped under 21 rugby. And when I came through the system at Coventry and Leicester, there'd be a Leicester youth team, for example, which would be under 21s. So you might be 18 or 19, but you play in the under 21s. You play 2 or 3 years in the under 21s, and then as you either kicked on very quickly as a younger player and you got into the first, second or first team, and you got opportunity to, one, create combinations with other players that came through the system together to go into the first team. And, you know, year one, you're 18, so you might be a little bit behind the game physically or skill-wise, but a year later, you're a little bit better in that environment and maybe you might captain the side or lead the pack or... and that creates leadership, and you learn how to captain a side and think for yourselves. But now it's just under 20. I mean, at junior level in England, there's only an under 18 league. Once they're too old for them, under 18s, they're into senior rugby, and there's a void where those 19-year-olds play. Because if you're not physically capable or physically able, skill-wise able to play in the Championship or National One, where do you play? So for me, there's an actual void of age group rugby below senior rugby for lads to play in, which is a shame, because actually the old system in many ways worked. But the caveat to that is, if you're a professional team, it costs quite a lot of money to run a full-time team. So playing every week is expensive, and you have to have enough players to make the team up. And you know, there are lots of other problems around that are financial, because a lot of professional clubs will spend their money on the team that plays in the Premiership on Saturday, because that's what they get judged by. And that's the short-termism of professional sport, and that's part and parcel of it, I'm afraid.
How often were you talking to the other directors of rugby about broad stuff like that, or do all the directors of rugby very much run their own camp and you don't really come out of that?
No, to be fair, I mean, obviously we know each other, I think we share all the same problems, but to be fair, there's very little dialogue between Premiership DORs around the openly around the issues that go on. It's just the nature of it.
Yeah, because I'd have thought that as a development tool, you could all kind of agree with it that you want an under-20s or an A-League or something like that. Or maybe, you know, the club just farms out their academy lads to, you know, clubs like Coventry or Bedford or whoever it is.
Yeah, I mean, we have dual registration. We have guys on loan. You know, they have guys on loan to Championship teams and National One. But the difficulty is that you've got a lot of test players away during the summer on summer tour. So you've got those young lads at the bottom of your squad being in pre-season, helping you make the numbers up to play games, prepare. So they're not with their loan clubs. And then when they go to their loan clubs, it's late in August. So the loan clubs have already organised the season. They've already got players that are ready to play. So they start at the bottom of that. And then that's hard for them to get a game because they've not been with their loan club. And then in the start of the season, there's A-League games, so you don't want them playing on Saturday because they've got to play on Monday. And then there's all sorts of logistical problems that come into it. The theory is very sound, you're right. The reality is a lot more difficult.
Now, I want to change the subject slightly, and I am going to talk about Edinburgh a little later. But for those listeners who only really know you as a director of rugby, can you just tell us about how you got into the game and your progression through it until the point you started playing for Tigers?
Yeah, I left junior school and went to senior school at a school called Harris Church of England Comprehensive in Rugby, where I was born and bred. And it was cross country or rugby.
So really?
I didn't like running. My elder brother played rugby. I've got a brother who's a couple of years older than me, so he played rugby. So it was sort of the natural competition of trying to outdo your brother. So I started playing rugby at 11 or 12, and have played ever since, really. So played for the school. I took to it pretty well. It was the one thing I was actually good at school was rugby. The rest of it I was pretty rubbish at. Everything else I was rubbish at, but I could play rugby. So it was my one thing that kept me interested in school, to be fair. And then I played for played from 12 up to 16, played for England's, for Warwickshire schools and Midlands, and then for England under 16s, left school at 16, went to work. And then I joined Coventry and came through the system at Coventry, played for England 21s in those days. Played for Coventry first team in 1990-91 and joined Leicester in 92. So pretty ordinary, you know, just play because I love playing. And if I was good enough, people would notice and you might get an opportunity further up the chain. So that was pretty much how it was in those days, I suppose.
What would you have been doing if you didn't take up rugby?
Well, like I said, I left school at 16 and I went and did an apprenticeship as a cabinet maker, an antique restorer and French polisher. So I did that as an apprentice for 5 years. And then I ran my own business from 21 to 27, doing that as my job, as a self-employed business. And signed professional papers when I was 27. In 1997, I signed for Leicester. And I've been in professional rugby ever since.
Wow. Well, one of the reasons I asked that is because when Sky used to have all the Premiership rights, and this is a long time ago, They did an interview with yourself. I think it was yourself, Garforth, and and Roundtree. Now, I can't quite remember the story, but I've always thought if I get the chance to interview you, I'd ask, how did you guys meet? Because I'm sure it's something like you first met in the back of a truck or something.
Yeah, no. I played at Coventry Colts, and Darren Garforth's brother, Joe, was my teammate. He's the same age as me. He was a prop, loosehead prop. And we went out on a Friday night after a game, myself and Joe, and Darren, his brother, who obviously I played with at Leicester for a long time after that, he picked us up on the Saturday morning, but there was no room in the scaffold wagon. So me and Joe jumped on the back of the lorry, and we got a lift on the back of the lorry with a scaffold tube. So that was my first introduction to Darren Garforth. And then obviously I spent a long time playing next to him at Leicester when I joined there.
Excellent. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I'm going mad or not, because it must have been about 15 years ago since that interview was aired.
It was a long time ago. You've got a better memory than I have, to be fair.
I guess the next bit is congratulations on the new role in Edinburgh. A bit of a departure from Toulon. What was it that attracted you to this role?
It's in all intents, it's a big club. I mean, it's not obviously probably got to where it would like to in the professional era. I mean, I think it's a great challenge. There's a lot of very good young players there. I met Mark Dodson, the chief executive, and Scott Johnson, the Scottish director of rugby, and they're good people. I trust them. There's a good plan in place there. I mean, there's a bit of sorting out to do. I think I'm the man to drive that forward. I think that challenge for me is good. I've always, obviously, Leicester's my only experience from a coaching point of view.
Yeah.
Now Toulon for 5 or 6 months, then on to Edinburgh. So. Broadening my horizons, a great opportunity to actually affect change in a place that needs some real direction. A lot of very good young Scottish players that will come through and hopefully develop into some are already at full international level, but there's a lot of other guys that will come through, and there's a lot of raw talent there, and it just needs sorting. And it's a different challenge in the fact that a lot less resource than Leicester. The squad cap. I mean, the money to spend on the squad is a lot less, and we're going to have to make very much the best of what we've got, and that will come down to how it's driven from myself, how it's coached, and how well they're coached. But I think the feeling is that maybe that they've underperformed for what they've got, and in the inception of Pro 12, Edinburgh have never finished higher than eighth. So the reality is that they haven't fulfilled their potential at this point. For whatever reason, and they've had some good players. They've got some good players that historically they've had some very big players that have come through and played for Scotland and the Lions. But as a club, they've only had fleeting parts of success. But that success hasn't actually cultivated in them winning anything. So they've had some good European runs. They've finished second in the Celtic League, which is a different format to the Pro 12 now. So there's a lot about the club that's very, very good. I think Edinburgh's a big rugby city. I think my job is to, one, get the team to gel and have an identity and obviously improve from a playing point of view, but also getting the city behind the team, because there's a lot of rugby supporters in Edinburgh that probably would like to see the team do well for obvious reasons, but also we need to fill this, my side, the new stadium, and there's 5,500 seats there that we'd like to fill every time we play. But we need to do that. We need to make sure that we, one, have got a good team with a good culture that everybody can see is working exceptionally hard to get results. And even if we don't get the right result, which, it's sport, you do lose, that you put a team out there that's committed and cares about what it's doing, and supporters see that. So they've got something to follow and something to identify with.
Just out of interest, your conversation with Scott Johnson, I assume that a lot was spoken about regarding Edinburgh and how it helps out with the national team. Is the structure of how Edinburgh and Glasgow interact with the SRU a lot different to say how you would work with the RFU?
Oh, very different, because obviously everybody's centrally contracted in theory. So obviously there's a driver around the national team for obvious reasons, but also I think having, as Glasgow have shown, having a strong club environment and culture and success, and having a winning mentality, and Glasgow have clearly done that, and obviously won the Pro 12, and this year doing exceptionally well in Europe, is that that's important too. So I think Glasgow have got that. They've got that identity. They've created that. Obviously, I think there's probably been a little bit more focus on Glasgow than there has been on Edinburgh. It does help that they're 60 miles away from the National Stadium, so that keeps them in isolation to a point. That helps you create an identity, your own identity. And my job, along with a few others at Edinburgh Rugby, is to create that club feel and, you know, be close to the union but have that separation. So actually, Edinburgh's the objective. Playing for Scotland, of course it's important. And we, you know, whether it's a Fijian or a Samoan or an Australian, I don't mind. I want them to play at the highest level they can. But the objective has to be Edinburgh first, play well for Edinburgh, earn the respect of your teammates, play well, and then if that leads on to getting picked for Scotland or whoever you play for, then so be it. But Edinburgh has to become the first objective, because like anything, if you get your club rugby right and your day-to-day training and management and work ethic's very good, then that will give you opportunity higher up the chain. You can't just do it at test level, you have to do it at club level too.
Interesting. So within your job role, or your job description, sorry, there's nothing saying that you have to produce a certain amount of Scottish internationals, or is it all solely focused on the performance of Edinburgh?
As simple as that. Get Edinburgh as good as I can. Because the offshoot of that will be, you know, those young Scottish players that are in that squad now and some senior guys, if they are well coached and well prepared, they will naturally come through to the national side, and that will give the national side more depth. And as you've seen with Glasgow, you know, Glasgow have got a good culture. They've got young players that have come through, and that's cultivated, you know, cultivated in winning the Pro 12, but also guys like, you know, Hogg and Finn Russell and several others, coming through and playing exceptionally well for the Scottish team and put themselves in prime position to play for the Lions in the summer.
Yeah, I can't really work out what the relationship is between Glasgow and Edinburgh, whether it's sort of a deep rivalry, or it's a sort of kind of like a little brother relationship at the moment.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. My only, I have two experiences of rivalry, and that's Leicester-Northampton, which is pretty strong.
Yeah.
And Clare Montferrand, or ASM Montferrand and Brive, which are the same thing, and that's a pretty hot rivalry too. So I'm yet to see tasty that rivalry will be between Edinburgh and Glasgow. It will be interesting to be in the middle of that.
Well, I'll make a small prediction now. It's about to get a lot more tasty.
I will see. I'm not sure me and Dave Rennie are ever going to fall out, so we'll see.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Now, I am aware that you're a real life grown up, so I don't suppose you've got any social media channels or anything.
No, because there's enough forums for people to abuse me on, so I tend to not have them.
Well, best of luck, and I really hope that you enjoy it up in Edinburgh.
Cheers, thanks a lot.
Cheers, Richard.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.